Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Hope you're okay. It's Thursday, May the 16th, and our top story today is that several staff from a Kent prison have been taken to hospital after their canteen food was spiked with drugs. Paramedics were called to HMP Swaleside on the Isle of Sheppey last Thursday. It's understood inmates had prepared a dish which they called staff special curry and spiked it with a psychoactive substance known as spice. Well, our reporter Megan Carr has been speaking to Andy Hamlin from the Criminal Justice Workers Union.
We reported on Thursday last week that there had been a mass poisoning at HMP Swaleside. Prisoners that work in the staff mess or canteen had added what we believe or what is believed to be a synthetic psychoactive substance. Or spice to a staff curry, which had been put on sale in the staff mess, and around 25 staff had purchased that day. That obviously led to staff having symptoms of raised heart rates having breathing difficulties. So the ambulance service were called. We understand that 9 ambulances from South East Coast Ambulance Service attended. And an emergency unit response unit was set up within the establishment to deal with it. It was 25 members of staff that were affected by the contamination, and 5 of those were admitted to hospital that day, but were released that evening.
It sounds absolutely horrendous, and it must have been so scary for those that had eaten that curry. How have staff been left feeling after this?
Obviously, to start with, I think it was dealing with the physical effects. So obviously that was the worry around staff having to go to hospital, informing their families and bits like that they had been affected. You know, spice can have quite a negative effect, especially if you've got underlying medical conditions. So anything heart related or breathing related or respiration, spice can have quite a bad effect on that. Even secondhand, we've seen that even secondhand sort of smoke inhalation and that sort of thing have been heavy and have had difficulties with people's breathing and their heart rates.
And just for people that don't understand, why would prisoners be in a position to be able to spike workers' food? How does that work? How does that setup work?
So it's not unusual for prisoners to work in kitchens within the establishments. This happens all over the country. It's not unique to Swaleside. They work in the kitchens which supply the food to prisoners, but they also work in the kitchens or the canteens that supply staff food in their lunch hours and their breaks. We would expect that sort of prisoner to be a very low risk and a more trusted type of prisoner that will be going in there to actually do those jobs. The security team at each establishment would carry out a work risk assessment for each prisoner potentially to work in that department. So we'd be looking at any sort of drug issues or violence issues that they wouldn't be allowed to take those positions. It would only be those prisoners that are at the lowest risk of being able to work in sort of those sort of areas.
The Ministry of Justice has told the Kent Online podcast that an investigation is ongoing. Just to tell you a bit more about HMP Swaleside, it holds men convicted of serious offences and those who pose a high risk to the public. It currently has around 1,100 inmates. Its last inspection found that levels of violence were high and drugs too easy to obtain.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories: Setna Park in Ramsgate's been cordoned off by police after a man was stabbed. Ambulance crews were called to a property in Camden Square in the early hours of this morning. The victim, who's in his 40s, is in a serious condition in hospital, and forensic officers have been seen working in nearby Boundary Park. A man's been charged after 2 people had to be taken to hospital following an assault in Sheerness. The disturbance is thought to have started in a property in Coronation Road on Monday night. Vehicles were also damaged. A 30-year-old from Beatrice Road in Greater London is facing facing charges of grievous bodily harm, possession of an offensive weapon, assaulting an emergency worker, and criminal damage. A phone thief who knocked a worker at the Apple Store in Bluewater to the ground has been locked up. Murad Mousse was caught stealing almost £1,600 worth of goods from the branch last November. The 24-year-old, who lives in Tilson Gardens in Brixton, was sentenced to 24 weeks. Now, a childcare worker has described the moment a baby boy started choking on his food at an Ashford nursery. 9-month-old Oliver Steeper was being fed bolognese by Nazia Begum when he started to gag and gasp in September 2021. He died in hospital 6 days later. Well, reporter James Pallant says an inquest heard from Miss Begum and the nursery's manager, Debbie Alcock.
Their testimonies revealed that multiple members of the Jelly Bean staff, including Miss Begum and Mrs. Alcock, did not have up-to-date paediatric first aid training at the time. Ms. Begum's emotional testimony took jurors through the accident in detail, describing the moment that Oliver inhaled a piece of minced meat, gagged, and stopped breathing. During Mrs. Alcock's evidence, she recounted how the baby turned a shocking blue-purple colour before she attempted to resuscitate him with CPR. And we learned on Monday that Oliver's parents assumed that their child was only being given pureed food at the nursery. At the time of his enrolment in September 21, he had barely two teeth, and he had just begun weaning off breast milk. But the testimony today of the two Jelly Bean staff members revealed discrepancies between the parents' expectations of what Oliver was being fed and what staff members were actually giving him. Miss Begum, who was not Oliver's key carer, said she could not remember having any detailed conversations with Mrs. Steeper about exactly what he should be fed. And Mrs. Alcock stated that she would not have expected Oliver, at 9 months, to have been fed pureed food, rather, quote, textured food, some lumps in his food to encourage him to accept those lumps, some finger foods like toast or banana, unquote. When he choked, Oliver was being fed finely chopped up penne bolognese. The inquest, scheduled to go on until the end of next week, is still to hear from nursery chefs, paramedics and an Ofsted representative.
The hearing in Maidstone continues.
Kent Online reports.
The price of a bus pass to help children get to school in Kent is set to increase by £100. The Kent Travel Saver currently costs £450 a year. Council bosses were able to keep the price on hold this year, but say inflation means it'll have to go up next term. Rebecca Parr is a parent. She's not happy with the increase.
We are in a fortunate position where I've changed jobs, I now work from home, so I can be on hand if necessary. My partner's self-employed. If he has to do the school run, it costs him. He's going to get to work late. I appreciate that the cost of living, the cost of everything has increased. I do appreciate that. However, for the service that they're providing, it's not good value for money. There's no promises that the service that we're getting will improve for that amount of money. It's substandard. We get days where we've had to do emergency school runs because the bus hasn't turned up, it hasn't broken down, and the attitude is kind of, oh well, and it carries on regardless. So I think they need to be a bit more transparent on why they're making those increases and if the service is going to improve as a result of those increases.
The authority insists the service is still good value for money, but Swale Independent Councillor Mike Baldock is worried about the impact it'll have on families.
Again, I'll say you've got to put it in the context of the huge increases that have gone on over the last 4 years. So anything like that should already been built into those sort of increases. Another £100 on top of what people have had to suffer in the last few years really is too much. And I don't think it's fair because, as I say, people are running out of choices. And when you put people into a corner like that, you cause a lot of desperation, a lot of hardship in some cases.
Councillor Sean Holden is chair of the Environment and Transport Committee at KCC. He says they have no choice but to increase the charge.
I think the overall cost is about £14.5 million, and the current council gets back about £9.5 million. So the overall cost is £5 million to Kent County Council and taxpayers. That's the subsidy we extend. And the costing of it is set by the prices that the bus companies charge. Kent County Council doesn't run any buses. We are subsidising the use of buses by people. We also give direct subsidies to the bus companies. Very unusual for a county council to do that. Very few do.
They were all speaking to the local democracy reporting service, and you can watch a report on this story by heading to the KMTV pages on the website. Elsewhere, hundreds of people have now signed a petition calling on Stagecoach to reinstate axed bus services across Canterbury, Home Bay and Whitstable. The company launched their revised timetable earlier this month, reducing the frequency of buses on some routes. Any petition which gathers more than 1,000 signatures can be taken to council. So far, 650 people have signed.
Kent Online reports.
Two people have been arrested following the theft of cables which left villagers near Maidstone without the internet. Homes in Merriworth were cut off earlier this month, causing an estimated £3,000 of damage to farmland. Two men in their 20s were tracked down using AMPR data. One's been charged with criminal damage, the other released on bail. Follow Kent Online on socials to see pictures of a woman police are hunting following a robbery in Canterbury. The victim had a handbag stolen by another woman in Burgate on the evening of May the 4th. Investigators have now shared CCTV images of the suspect. Figures seen by Kent Online show the popularity of Airbnbs is booming in Kent's seaside towns. Whitstable has 542 for rent. In Margate, that number's 443, and Broadstairs and Folkestone have around 300 each. Now, while some say the influx of tourists is good for the economy, others reckon they're stripping the life out of communities and creating ghost towns during the off-season. Well, you can read a special report today by Chris Britcher by heading to the website. Now, psychologists from the University of Kent are working on a new campaign to highlight the impact of social media on young people's mental health. They've teamed up with theatre group Portrait and local secondary school students to produce a performance called Generation FOMO. That stands for Fear of Missing Out. It's hoped it'll provide new understandings about teenagers' use of phones as we continue to mark Mental Health Awareness Week. Playwright Isabel Defoe has been speaking to Lauren Hampshire.
I was invited to work with the Marlowe Theatre a couple of years ago with their youth company. I was working with actors who were between 18 to 21. And they were sharing with me stories about their mental health, and I realized a lot of it was kind of stemming from their use of smartphones and social media. So they would have been kind of the first generation to be given a device quite young, right? So if they're in their early 20s now, they were kind of that. And so talking with them about how they felt that they were all given a device far too young, and they'd all seen inappropriate content by the age of 10 or 11. And as a mother of two young children myself, and also as my position as, so the Portrait Theatre, we are resident theatre company at the University of Kent. And so as our position on campus, you know, surrounded by young people, I was like, we have a responsibility here to kind of explore this issue a lot more. So been talking with Dr. Lindsay Cameron from the School of Psychology about this, and this, and she was also quite passionate about the topic. So we got working together on it. And I've been interviewing quite a lot of young people now. So this is very early stages of this play. Been working with young people aging from 10 to about 27. And the whole purpose of the interviews are to create a play. So everything that I write, nothing is fictional. It's all taken from those interviews.
What are some of the issues then that have come out of the interviews? What are some of the main things that kids or young people are struggling with their mental health as a result of social media?
You know, Lauren, I'm really shocked. I interviewed a group of children the other day, that friends of my son, who's 11 and he's in year six. And so there were six of them. Three of them, including my son, don't have a phone, and the rest of them do. And in their class, my son is one of four out of 28 who don't have a smartphone. And the ones that do have a phone were putting on the table the word addiction already at the age of 10 or 11. They are already aware that they don't want to become addicted to their phones. They're frightened of that. They're aware of how it affects their mental health. The group, the WhatsApp groups that they seem to be on, the school WhatsApp groups, are very loud. inappropriate content is already being shared at that age on those groups, and they're only primary school children. And then when you talk to older young people, they will be very honest. Some of them will say how porn is affecting their lives and colouring very much their relationships and their sexual experiences. They will tell you that porn is everywhere on every social media platform that they use. A lot of them talk about also eating disorders, self-harm and all of that, and how they can get so much inspiration from various social media platforms that they're on. You know, and that's quite frightening, I think, that the amount of content that they're digesting.
Kent Online News.
A Kent secondary school has applied to be the first in the UK to have a skate park within its grounds. Skateboarding is already taught at Folkestone Academy, and the plans are for a piece of unused land previously said to not be level enough for sport. The proposals include a shallow bowl, two small ramps, a rail, ledge and seating. Fundraising efforts to help Air Ambulance Kent, Surrey, Sussex by the helicopter have reached £1 million in just 6 weeks. The money will secure the future of the helicopter, which is an essential lifeline for people across the county who need urgent medical treatment. Any additional money raised will go towards improving and developing their services. Now, a school teacher from Benenden is taking on an incredible challenge to raise money for a Kent charity. Nick Rendell has set himself the task of running 1,000 kilometres in just 100 days, all in support of homelessness charity Catching Lives. He's been running 10 kilometres a day since the end of March.
It's our centenary this year, so we're 100 years old. And so for that, we came up with the idea of doing 100 acts of kindness over the year. And I was talking with my wife, say, well, I enjoy running. And I think she jokingly said, well, why don't you do 100 10Ks? And then I thought about it and I thought, well, why not? I really enjoy running. And actually to have a challenge for a charity, which is linked to the community in which I live, the Catching Lives charity, it was almost something that I felt I compelled to do. And so the more I spoke about it, the more it became a reality. The more people I told, the more I had to actually think that this is going to be really happening. So I started really preparing for in October and to see if I could actually do it. And I thought by December I could. So it was something I'd mentioned to the school as an act of kindness. So I'm in the midst of it now and it's going okay.
Can you tell me a little bit about Catching Lives and your association with the charity?
So within my community in Benenden Village, we've got a historic kind of link with Catching Lives. I'm running in memory of a great member of the village community, Tracy Claridge, who very sadly passed away a few years ago. And he had a very strong connection with Catching Lives, and a number of the members of our community volunteer at Catching Lives, which is a homeless charity working in Canterbury, with a base in Canterbury, East Kent as well, working with those suffering from homelessness or edge of homelessness and or insecure accommodation. And I went to visit the charity before I began the challenge to meet Tansin, the head of the charity, and actually to have a look at what they do. And it's an inspiring place. They offer food, they offer health, they offer medical support, they offer mental health support to those really in our society who are suffering. And I think it's a way that we can actually help in a very small way, support them to get them back into a sense of secure housing or to support them any way they need. And I think I was inspired by my visit to really just crack on with this challenge.
A Just Giving page has been set up, which has already raised more than £1,000, and you can follow his progress on Instagram.
Kent Online Sports.
Footballer and Gillingham have announced they're releasing 8 players and making 4 available for transfer. 3 have also returned to their parent clubs following loan spells, while new contracts have been offered to Glenn Morris and Dom Jeffries. With all the details in full, here's our Gills reporter, Luke Cordell.
The retain list was put together before Mark Bonner got the job as manager, but obviously the club wanted to give him the final say on who was going to go and who was going to stay. He's now giving that the green light. It was released yesterday, Wednesday. We now know what players are going to be leaving. There's 8 departures. Most of them are young professionals. There's 4 players that are under contract but are being made available for transfer. There are not really many surprises in there. George Lapsley, one of them, hasn't really done what people would have expected him to have done at the club, attacking midfielder. Ollie Hawkins, striker, played a lot of games once he overcame a persistent heel injury. But once Josh Andrews came into the team, he was different class, really, and had a lot of pace about him up top, which is something Hawkins hasn't got, really. Ashley Nadison has got pace, started the season quite well, but his form has really sort of dropped off. There's no surprise that the club probably want to move him on. Scott Malone, experienced left back, no doubt probably on decent money. If the club can move him on, and then that would free up funds for someone else. They've already got Max Clark, who can play left back. So they're sort of well sort of suited in that position. Of the players that are going, Sean Williams, the captain, vastly experienced, great player in his day, but age has caught up with him in the end. So no surprise to see him go. Macaulay Bonn, striker. I think a lot of people remember his infamous car crash on the way to training. Didn't really help his cause. He finished the season at Cambridge United. At the end of the day, didn't really score enough goals, didn't really have the impact that anybody wanted him to have. So another player going, and another wage released, where new manager Bonner can bring in one of his own picks. There are two players that are out of contract that have been offered new terms. Glenn Morris, 40-year-old goalkeeper, is probably one which might be a bit of a surprise. No doubt Jake Turner will be the number one goalkeeper next season, but Glenn Morris is an able deputy, so if they can get him tied up for another year, then that'd be great. Dom Jeffries is an up-and-coming midfielder. High hopes for him. He's out of contract, but because he's under the age of 24, Gillingham can claim compensation if he does move on to another club, and I'd say it's probably a 50-50 call whether he stays. There's quite a few clubs that are believed to be interested in him, and Neil Harris might want to take him to Millwall as well. He's obviously a big fan of his, so we'll have to wait and see what happens with that one. Six youngsters have gone. They were largely made up of the B team. They played in the B team last season, as well as going out on loan towards the end of the season. But now it's down to Bonner to pick the players he wants, fill those gaps. He knows he's got a clear picture now what he needs. So it's all over to them then, and we look forward to seeing what sort of players they come in.
You can see that retained list and let us know what you think by heading to Kent Online. Meantime, Stephen Clements has said it was a privilege to manage Gillingham and he wasn't ready for it to be his last waltz at the club. He was sacked at the end of the season after failing to guide them into the League Two playoffs. In a statement, he's thanked the club's owners, staff and fans and says he's determined to be head coach or manager again. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to check out our latest Eat My Words food review.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.